would have taken his helmet off if not for the rads. They were high here, and getting worse with every step. He looked at the sign once more, thinking of the picture that had burned in the Stryker vehicle. It was that image that brought him here. But this place looked nothing like the picture. X stepped over a 2-foot-wide crevice that had split the road in half. Blue tentacles writhed in the air, reaching for him. He didn't know whether heat or movement attracted them, but whatever the reason, his presence was riling them up. X navigated around the carnivorous vegetation and raised his rifle scope to glass the area for bigger threats. A wide array of monsters dwelled in the wastes. Since their journey began in Hades, the man and his dog had battled stone beasts in the desert, and in the cities he fought the sirens, as well as big lizards and one-eyed bird-like abominations. From overgrown poisonous plants to man-eating worms, just about everything down here on the surface was out to eat you. Lightning forked into the ground, reminding him that the swirling, bulging dome of storm clouds could be as deadly as any monster. But the monsters and the storm would not stop him. Somewhere out here, not far from here, was the place he'd been searching for. The place from the picture. The place he had risked everything to reach. "We're almost to the ocean," he said, with what might have passed for a smile. Lowering the rifle, he pulled out his maps and shuffled through them till he found the military map from the Stryker. Not far from their location, underneath an airfield, was a bunker. Sliding the precious maps back into their sleeve, he started walking again. Soon the journey would be over. They would find a home, a place where they could stay until the end. He wasn't exactly sure where that place would be, only that it would have a view of the ocean. This was the one thing he had managed to hold on to. He had lost almost everything else, some of it more than once, his gear, his weapons, his book of memories. But he held on to this dream. These days he spent most of his energy just staying alive. He was tired, exhausted. The years of traveling and fighting had taken their toll, and his skin was a canvas of injuries, some of which had never quite healed. Miles, on the other hand, was still cavorting around like a young dog, just as he had when X unfroze him back in Hades. It was hard to believe that was 8 years ago. But their journey was almost over. The ocean wasn't far now. He looked back up at the sky, and a distant thought of the people who had left him down here to die flitted through his mind. The memories were as muddy as the dirt on the side of the road. "That life is over. Let it go." X had forgotten their names. After his journal burned and his messages went unanswered, he had finally decided to give up, both on those he loved and on those who had betrayed him. There was nothing for him in the sky now, just the long road and the loyal dog that trotted by his side. They kept moving, one step at a time. X was low on food, low on ammo, low on water, and low on energy, but he could do this. He would reach his goal, and then he could rest. Several days of traveling south along the road had led them past the ruins of civilization. X had seen similar sights on his journey across what had once been the United States of America. The crumbling towers and flattened buildings looked pretty much the same wherever he went. But on the third day of the trek through Florida, X saw something new. He almost broke down at the sight. "It can't be," he croaked. He tried to swallow, but his throat was too dry. Miles sat on his haunches unconcerned, but the man didn't believe what he was seeing. This couldn't be the ocean, could it? The water was brown and muddy, like sewage. There were no white caps. No beaches, and a terrible smell filtered through his helmet. Lightning flashed through the storm system, illuminating the water for as far as X could see. Several islands and spurs of land stretched out into the muck. He reached into his vest and pulled out the maps again. They were over 250 years old, but the tattered papers had served him well this far. This time, however, either the map was wrong or the land had changed, or else he was lost. He tucked the sleeve back into his vest and unslung his rifle. The cracked leather strap nearly snapped. Like everything else, it was barely holding together. "Come on, boy," he said, his throat burning with every word. He knew that something was wrong, but he had no medicine. Miles looked up, concern in his gaze. That was what the ocean was supposed to look like, X thought, looking into the dog's bright blue eyes. Not this brown shit. The road curved out through the water, framed on either side by a half-eroded landmass 100 feet wide. Miles followed him toward the bridge, both of them alert for threats. He raised his wrist monitor to check the radiation levels. They were still in the yellow zone, but the rads continued ticking higher and higher. He stopped when they got to the land bridge. Several chunks of concrete had broken off and slid down the sides. More debris littered the slopes. Hulls of old-world vehicles, rebar, and hunks of metal. He leaned over the side to see human skeletal remains covered in red moss and half-protruding from the mud. Purple and blue plants grew along the road and in the cracks. One plant sprouted through the grinning jaws of a skull. X put one boot on the bridge and kept the other on the road behind him. Something was strange about the remains below. The skeletons looked different. Miles remained where he was, his helmet angled toward the water. They both stood there for several minutes, listening to the clap of thunder and the gurgle of the water. Looking through the scope on his rifle, X confirmed the skeletal remains below weren't all human. Some of them were machine. He could tell by the smooth bones. Human remains didn't age like that. There were plenty of robot skeletons in the wastes, but X had never seen a graveyard like this. Whatever had happened to the bots below didn't matter now, though. He placed his other boot on the bridge, waited a moment to see whether it would hold, and then gestured for Miles. Rifle up, X scanned the slopes to either side. Miles's masked muzzle sniffed the path as they walked, following the curved road deeper into the swamps. Thunder boomed louder, shaking the concrete beneath his boots. To the east, lightning zapped the water. The insulating layers in their suits would protect them from anything short of a direct hit, but X had made sure they wouldn't attract the charge by adding a second layer of rubber. He stepped over to the edge of the road and looked down. There was no way to tell how deep it was, and it was so murky he couldn't see whether anything lurked below the surface. The storm boomed in the distance, and shockwaves rumbled across the ground. Miles let out a whine. "It's okay," X said. "Just keep going." They pushed onward, the din of the storm pounding like great drums in the clouds, growing louder with each step. Another thunderclap rumbled through the ground. The sound faded, but the concrete continued to shake. The vibration grew more violent. X could feel it in his bones now. This was more than thunder. Miles halted, sat, and howled. Now X knew that something was wrong. The dog had a sixth sense about danger. "What is it?" X asked. Miles barked back at him. X looked down the road and then back the way they had come. He didn't want to turn back, but Miles wouldn't budge. Before X could move, a section of dirt on the right side of the bridge crumbled away, splashing into the water. Cracks webbed across the road. Miles nudged up against him, nearly hurting him off the road. X finally realized what was happening. He had lived through dust storms powerful enough to skin you alive, and ice storms that could freeze you where you stood. But he had never been in an earthquake before. He didn't know what to do besides run. Miles ran after him down the bridge, toward solid land. More cracks broke across the road, and a piece the size of a truck tumbled down the left side and splashed into the brown water. The entire area must be some sort of sinkhole. Maybe it had always been this way, but he suspected that the bombs had made things even more unstable. He hopped over part of the buckling street. Miles followed with a graceful leap. For several minutes they ran at full speed, the quake still rocking the land bridge. They weren't far from where they had started. Ahead, the curved road connected with solid ground. Water sloshed along the side of the bridge as the groaning earth shook beneath them. X glimpsed movement under the dark surface, but lost sight of it when his boot caught a chunk of concrete. He fell, scraping his knee pads on the road, and dropped the rifle. He paused long enough to grab the weapon, and then continued running after Miles. The dog was still bolting for safety, and X didn't bother calling after him. The dog would reach safety, even if X didn't. That was something, at least.
"Move it, old man!"
Breaking into a run, he glimpsed another flash of movement in the sewage-colored water. This wasn't from the quake. This was alive. A curved red back squirmed like a snake beneath the surface, and then vanished. The land bridge suddenly shook so hard that a fissure opened up just a few feet away from solid land. Miles tried to stop but slid toward the widening crevice splitting the bridge in half. X ran harder than he could remember running as the dog slipped over the side. Miles managed to turn and claw at the top with his front paws, but his hind legs had gone over the edge. Throat and lungs burning, X sucked in air, forcing his tired muscles to pump faster. He bent low and prepared to slide toward Miles when a massive coiled body rose from the water on the left side of the bridge. A bright red tentacle flicked out and grabbed Miles. X screamed in wordless rage and horror. He dropped his rifle and ran full speed for the edge of the road. As he prepared to jump, he unsheathed his knife, then propelled his body into the air.
"I'm coming, boy!" he yelled.
His boots sank into the fetid muck as he splashed into the water. The world went dark for a flitting moment. He kicked above the surface and turned from side to side to search the murky water for Miles or the beast. His muffled screams filled his helmet.
"Miles! Miles!"
Another tentacle whipped in front of him, slamming into his side. The 20-foot-long creature had Miles in its grip. X kicked toward him and swiped with the blade, slashing through the rubbery hide. The wound did not bleed, but instead disgorged pinkish spheres the size of apples from the hive's farm. He slashed again as the creature twisted its boneless body through the water. This time his blade sliced through the bulging midsection, letting out more of the balls that X realized must be eggs. The gravid monster let Miles go and whisked about to face X. A halo of spikes rose around the creature's head, and it opened a maw lined with sharp teeth. Then the serpentine nightmare clamped its mouth shut and squirmed away as X jabbed at it. He sucked in filtered air and tried to watch the beast circling. The cloudy water made it nearly impossible to see anything, and the weight of the armor made treading water difficult. A flash of motion alerted him at the last second as the monster darted through the murk. X moved left and jabbed again with the knife, but the blade missed, and the creature wasted no time throwing a coil of its muscular body around his chest armor and squeezing. X's arms were still free, and he plunged his blade into the thick hide as it continued coiling its body around his legs, pulling him deeper into the water. He couldn't see Miles anywhere, and then he couldn't see anything at all as the monster dragged him below the surface. Present day. Les Mitchells and the other divers watched Aaron Jenkins enter the wind tunnel. The noise drowned out the raised voices outside the launch bay. Les tried not to get distracted by the civil unrest in the corridors. He wasn't sure what was going on outside, but he canceled it out the best he could and focused on training. The wind tunnel was the closest they were going to get to diving before being launched from one of the tubes.
"You really think you're going to fit in that thing?" Jennifer teased.
She jabbed Les in the ribs hard enough that he shot her a glare.
"I'm not a freaking giraffe," she finished with a grin.
Les laughed. Then he reached out and pointed at her hair.
"You're probably going to need to cut those to fit in your helmet."
"Yeah, yeah." She pushed her dreadlocks over her shoulders and focused on the wind tunnel. Don Ola and Tom Price both had their arms crossed over their red coveralls watching Aaron get into position. They all were beat from training 11 hours straight. After the wind tunnel, they were heading to the armory for weapons simulation. And tomorrow, they would put it all to use. Les still couldn't quite believe they were going to dive so soon. The thought sent a chill through his long body. The wind tunnel clicked on in front of him, pulling him back to reality. Aaron rose into the air, arms out. Bending her knees and putting her elbows at right angles, she moved gracefully in the upward draft. She drew her limbs in a little and dropped almost to the grate below.
This is the stable fall position, she said over the comms. This is what you'll be doing for most of a dive. She held the position for several minutes. You will nosedive only if we're in a hurry, Aaron said. And usually that happens only if the hive's weather sensors missed picking up a storm. The quicker you get through it, the less likely you are to get fried by a lightning strike.
Les watched her go through the moves, but the 100 other things on his mind made it hard to concentrate. Phil, Trey, and Catherine were all counting on him to take care of them. He was used to pressure and stress, but this was on an entirely new level. In his mind's eye, he kept imagining the aftermath of his death. Trey would end up rotting away in the brig, his wife would succumb to her illness, and Phil would grow up an orphan, if she got a chance to grow up at all.
You're going to save them, Les said out loud.
Don, Jennifer, and Tom all looked in his direction.
You okay? Jennifer asked.
Sorry, Les replied, his cheeks warm with embarrassment.
Aaron did a backflip inside the tunnel and continued speaking over the comms to explain her moves and how to execute them. Les shook away his worries and watched, knowing he would be up soon. A few minutes later, Aaron ordered Ola to shut off the fans. The wind jets clicked off, and she lowered to the grate and took off her helmet. Aaron stepped out of the glass tube and ran a hand over her mohawk.
"Who's first?" she asked.
Ola stepped up. He was always first to volunteer.
"He's definitely going to be the first to die," Jennifer whispered to Les.
"My thoughts exactly."
Aaron moved out of the way to stand beside Les and the other two divers while Ola secured his helmet and stepped into the tube.
"You okay, Giraffe?" Aaron asked.
"I'm good," Les said.
"I've got a question," Jennifer said. "Something we've all been wondering about."
Aaron nodded.
"Okay. What happened to Team Wolf all those years ago?"
The question blindsided Les, and Aaron too, judging by her face. It contorted as if she was remembering something awful.
After a brief pause, Aaron said, "Fair enough. 8 years ago, not too long after we lost X and a handful of other divers to Hades, my team was sent on a routine salvage mission."
"And?" Jennifer prompted.
Aaron sighed.
"And we were caught in the middle of a dust storm. We had the supply crates full of supplies and ready to deploy. Lane, Commander Bricken, should have ordered us to take shelter, but he wanted to get the crates in the air to beat the storm."
She paused again, massaging the surface of her wolf ring.
"We lost 4 divers that day, along with our supply crates. I helped John Tormund escape, but at a cost. He broke his back after the storm flung him into a rock. He lived only a few years after that."
"Wasn't Lane your boyfriend?" Jennifer asked.
Aaron shot the other woman an icy look.
"You ask a lot of questions."
Jennifer lifted one shoulder. Les wasn't sure whether it was an apology or a shrug.
"Anything else you guys want to know?" Aaron asked.
A shout sounded in the corridor outside the launch bay doors, and Les turned to see people running past the small windows.
"The hell's going on out there?" Tom asked.
Aaron let out a sigh.
"It's getting worse."
"What is?" said Jennifer.
Les looked over at Aaron. He couldn't quite read the expression on her dark, freckled features.
"Captain Jordan ordered all history purged from the ship," Aaron said. "Paintings, vids, books, everything."
Jennifer lowered her hands to her sides.
"You have to be kidding."
"I wish I were.
My dad told me last night."
"But without all that stuff, the hive is just a rusted hull and a couple of gas bladders," Tom said, looking thoughtful.
"Captain's orders," Aaron said.
"Damn right it is," Ola said over the comms from inside the wind tunnel. "Captain Jordan must have had a good reason to issue that order."
"May I?" Les asked, nodding toward the button that activated the wind tunnel. Aaron nodded, and Les walked up to the tunnel with a grin.
"Good luck, Ola."
He pushed the button and stepped back to watch.
"Shit, shit,"
Ola said, holding his arms out as the air took him. He rose halfway up the tube before losing his balance and flipping over. Jennifer and Tom both laughed, but the sounds were lost under the shouting in the corridors.
"That sounds bad," Les said.
What if the other passengers tear the ship apart while we're gone?
Don't worry about that, Aaron said. My dad will keep things under control up here.
Ola continued to struggle in the tube while they talked, and Les couldn't help but chuckle. The guy had no sense of balance whatsoever. He wobbled in the updraft like an overweight bird, arms and legs flapping.
We still need to pick a name for the team, Aaron said. Something new. Something different from any of the other teams.
Les looked at the flash of her silver ring as she reached up to scratch her head. He liked the name Wolf, but understood why she wouldn't want to use it again.
What about Phoenix? He said.
Why Phoenix? Aaron asked.
Les shrugged. He had picked it because he loved mythology, and naming the team after something culturally significant seemed like a big screw you to Jordan, without actually saying it to his face.
I'll run it by the other divers, Aaron replied.
More shouts broke out from the corridor, and the divers all turned toward the launch doors. A group of lower deckers ran past as militia soldiers in riot gear gave chase.
Damn fools, Les muttered.
The one good thing about his sons being in the brig was that he couldn't get hurt. Knowing the boy, he would be the first to throw down with the militia.
Don't worry, Aaron said. The ship has had problems like this before, but we always make it through. My dad will make sure of it.
Your dad's not the one I'm worried about, Les said.
10. Roger decided he didn't much like the swamps. Too much water, too much mud, and it smelled like an old sock full of manure.
What do you think happened to this place? Magnolia asked.
Boom, Roger said, miming an explosion.
I'm talking about the swamps, Magnolia said. Where the hell did they come from?
Doesn't matter, Michael said. Now be quiet. I'll take point. Layla and Mags, you take rear guard. Roger, get behind me and shut your trap. Eyes up and ears out. Roger hurried to catch up with Michael, who had already taken off at a trot. The young commander didn't have as many dives under his belt as Magnolia, but he was a natural leader who knew when it was time to joke around and when it was time to get down to business. Roger knew he needed to learn a thing or two about that. Lately, he was always saying or doing the wrong thing. For a while, he seemed to be finally getting somewhere with Magnolia. But then she dropped it. The gift he had made for her with his own hands and carried through a city full of monsters to deliver, onto a stranger's grave.
Maybe he should make her something else.
Look alive, Roger, Michael snapped, bringing his attention back to the task at hand. Michael had an AK-47 rifle trained on the buildings above, while Roger had been entrusted with only a small caliber pistol. He pulled the axe from the sheath over his shoulder and held both weapons in his hands. The distant whir of the turbofans pushing deliverance into the sky reverberated in the clouds above them, but he kept his focus on the buildings ahead. Empty windows, the glass long gone, looked out over the vast swamps. It was hard to imagine that 2.5 centuries ago, the occupants would have been looking through swaying palm trees at a sunny sky. Roger had seen Florida in old pre-war vids. It was never supposed to look like this. His boots crunched over the muddy, debris-strewn ground. Almost constant flashes of lightning made the dark landscape visible, but it was nothing like sunlight. The divers kept their NVGs off and used the blue glow to guide them toward the ruins. The path led up a steep slope with several stone and brick structures at the top. A steeple rose above the other buildings. Beams arched over what remained of the roof, framing the swirling storm.
Looks like a nice place, Roger muttered.
I'll check it out, Michael said.
Just be careful, Layla said.
Michael started up the muddy slope, and Roger followed close behind, using the same footholds to avoid falling on his ass. At the top, they looked out over an ancient city. A single metal chair sat in the middle of the road ahead. The sight gave Roger a chill. Who had sat here all those years ago to watch the world burn? Crooked brick foundations and stone walls framed a street leading across the island. Pools of water filled gaping craters in the sunken pavement. Thunder boomed, rattling his armor.
Keep sharp, Michael said.
He pulled out his binos while Roger chinned on his NVGs.
The green hue flickered over the ruins, but nothing moved. He took a few steps away from Michael to look at a brick building to the east. A hole in the wall provided a glimpse into the guts of the structure.
"Looks clear," Michael said.
He turned back to the edge of the slope and flashed hand signals to Magnolia and Layla. They continued down the street, with Roger angling his pistol at the east side and Michael searching the west with his rifle.
"You see these messed-up foundations?" Roger whispered. "Must have been some sort of geological event to make the ground shift like that."
Michael halted and brought a finger to the front of his helmet.
"Okay, I get the point," Roger thought.
Magnolia and Layla caught up with them as they approached the largest building, the one with arched roof beams and a steeple at the other end. A wide stone staircase led up to the front entrance. A massive set of double doors had once led into the building. The right door was missing, but the left appeared to be mostly intact. It looked like oak, maybe maple. Definitely not pine. Nothing as soft as pine would survive in conditions like this.
"This was a church, a place of worship," Magnolia said. "I've seen these places in the picture books on the Hive."
They walked cautiously up the stairs. The door on the left was carved with intricate designs that reflected the skill of a talented craftsman. Shards of colorful glass littered the dirt along the wall. Michael moved through the door and into the building. Roger nearly ran into him as he followed. The commander had stopped in the entrance, his left hand in a fist. Rays of blue light from the storm penetrated the clouds, cutting through the rotted rafters. The glow illuminated the inside of what had been a holy place, now covered in vines and roots. At the other end, the thick trunk of a tree had grown through a raised platform and up into the steeple overhead. Spiky branches with barbs on the ends extended over the rafters like some sort of palm tree out of a bad dream. Magnolia stepped up behind them.
"Holy shit," she whispered. "I saw something like this back in Charleston. Don't get close."
She raised her rifle and aimed at the center of the tree. Roger didn't understand. It was just a tree, not a siren.
"Hurry. Let's get out of here before it notices us," she said quietly.
"Notices us," Roger said, turning around to look at her.
As soon as he moved, the bark of the tree began to vibrate. Cracking and creaking sounded as vines rustled and branches swayed. Roger gulped.
"Oh, shit."
The web of interconnected vines and branches shifted and peeled away from the walls. Pieces of stone fell and shattered on the ground.
"Move it,"
Magnolia said. Everyone retreated except for Roger. He remained in the doorway watching as the strange tree began to glow. The thick foliage lit up all at once, flashing pink on the first pulse, and then an angry red. Someone grabbed him by the back of his armor and pulled him outside.
"You want to be plant food?" Magnolia said. "When I say move, you move!"
Roger pulled his gaze away just as the center of the tree split open, revealing something that looked a lot like an animal mouth with teeth the size of his arm. He stumbled backward and then loped down the stairs with Magnolia. Vines shot out of the entrance, wrapping around the door and pulling it back into the church.
"No!"
Roger shouted. A crunching came from the interior as the mutant tree destroyed the ancient wood. More vines snaked outside and writhed across the steps. Michael held up a hand.
"Hold your fire," he said.
Slinging his rifle over his shoulder, he pulled out a large blade instead. Magnolia followed suit, exchanging her gun for the two curved blades. She swiped at a vine that stretched toward them, slicing through it with a quick motion. A beat later, Roger holstered his pistol and gripped his axe in both hands. He hacked another limb in half with a sharp blade. Green blood sprayed the pavement. The tree inside the church answered with the crunch of more branches, and the interior lit up like a flame. Michael and the other divers sliced their way through to the center of the street as more vines tried to grab them. Layla leaped over one, crying out in pain when she landed on her injured ankle. Michael ran over and put his arm under her shoulder, while Magnolia and Roger kept the barbed appendages at bay.
"They're everywhere,"
Magnolia yelled. She wielded her two blades expertly, shearing off the limbs before they could touch her. She was much faster and more agile than Roger, who hacked away with his axe. The limbs were tough and pulpy, some so thick it took several swings to chop through them. For every vine he cut to pieces, 5 new ones appeared.
"Don't let them flank us!" Michael yelled.
Layla was still leaning on him as a crutch. Roger wasn't sure how badly she was hurt, but she was slowing them down. He fought harder, swinging madly at the vines and branches that now spilled from the interior of virtually every building. Pulsating red light bathed the 4 divers as they struggled down the street. Lightning slammed into the city. Sparks showered down. The thunder banged away in a constant din, making it nearly impossible to hear anything else. Roger lost track of time. He felt the sweat trickle across his skin, and his muscles began to ache with fatigue. A barbed vine streaked across his chest armor and wrapped around his calf guard, jerking on his leg so hard he hit the ground.
"Get it off! Get it off!"
he yelled. The limb yanked him toward a building. His armor scraped across the concrete.
"Help!"
he screamed, flailing for something to hold on to. Magnolia jumped over a branch, then sliced through the needle-covered tentacles. Thick green fluid gushed over the ground. She vaulted onto the hood of a rusted vehicle and then leaped toward Roger. Wielding one of the sickles, she severed the branch holding his leg.
"Get up!" she yelled.
Roger grabbed her arm and jumped to his feet. Not bothering to wipe off the green fluid that oozed down his legs, he ran toward the other divers. Layla and Michael were fighting off the vines on the opposite sidewalk. They came together in the center and fought their way toward the end of the street.
"I think they're talking to one another," Magnolia shouted over the boom of thunder.
"No way,"
Layla yelled back.
"Plants can't do that."
Michael slashed at a vine that tried to trip him up.
"Just keep them back."
They struggled for another mile until Roger finally saw the city limits. His stomach sank at the sight of the brown swamp water slapping the banks of the eroding island. Get torn apart by vines, or drown in something that looked and smelled like sewage. Neither option appealed to him. He was really starting to wish he had stayed on the hive. He could be eating dinner with his parents right now. The tree things pursued them out of the city, but they could reach only so far. The divers lost them as they crossed into an open field. Before them lay the forbidding swampland.
"We're going to need one of those," Layla said,
pointing at the rusted stern of a boat resting on its side 50 paces away. Lightning fired the shore nearby, illuminating a dozen holes in the boat's hull. The team moved along the edge of the water. Tires, a bathtub, chairs, and other junk littered the beach. Roger turned to look at the branches behind them. They were twisting and curling, unable to reach any farther. They reminded him of fingers reaching toward them. They were trapped here between the swamp and a city infested with mutant trees. How else could things go wrong? An electronic wail answered his thought. He wasn't the only one terrified by the sound. The limbs and vines suddenly twisted away, crawling back toward the buildings they had left behind. The red glow faded, leaving the divers alone in the flashing blue light of the storm. Again came the high-pitched call of a siren. The divers stood together, armor clinking back to back as they sheathed their blades and pulled their guns. They all knew what was out there, and it was much worse than man-eating trees. The trading post reeked of body odor, but it also smelled of boiled cabbage and onions, which Jordan loved. His mother had made a cabbage soup that he would never forget. He hadn't tasted anything that good since he was 7 years old, not long before she died. He walked through the large room with his hands clasped behind his perfectly ironed white uniform. Sergeant Jenkins and Ensign Lohr followed close behind. They kept their hands on their batons as they walked. The lower deckers made a path when they saw Jordan. He rarely visited this place, but today he had a special reason. He continued through the sea of passengers. Buyers, sellers, and hustlers loitered everywhere he looked. Despite the nostalgic smell of cabbage and onions, he wanted to leave here as quickly as possible to escape the resentful glares from the throng of haggard faces. Most of them didn't see the captain who had risked everything to save them from joining the rest of humanity in the graveyards 20,000 feet below. They saw a privileged elite who didn't give them enough food, water, or medicine.
He had given up trying to win their hearts and minds. He cared only about preserving the ship and providing a future for these people and their descendants, even if they despised him for it. A woman in a colorful coat stitched together from scraps held out bottles of herbs.
"We'll cure all of your ailments, only..."
She darted away when she turned to see Jordan and his entourage. Two more loiterers turned and hurried through the crowd as he passed.
"That's what I thought," Jordan muttered.
He despised the so-called healers peddling their fake medicines. Janga had been one of those. In fact, he thought the multicolored coat might actually have belonged to the old woman. No matter how thoroughly he tried to erase the damage she had done below decks, Janga's legacy kept creeping back. They passed a makeshift stall where jars of clear liquid were on display. The vendor was trying to hide them under a cloth, but he wasn't fast enough. Jordan motioned for Ensign Lore.
"Go talk to Jimmy and confiscate his supply."
"Yes, Captain," Lore said.
The crowd grew thicker, and Jordan was at last obliged to have Jenkins clear the way. The sergeant pulled out his baton and waved it, yelling,
"Out of the way, everyone!"
Jordan followed him through the parting throng until they arrived at his destination, a booth with a crooked sign that read, "Dragon." The bulbs had all burned out, leaving the rusted shack draped in shadow. The owner, a man with curly red hair named Dom, stepped up to the counter. He blinked several times as he tried to focus on Jordan in the weak light.
Well, hello.
The clearly nervous shop owner smiled unconvincingly.
What can I do for you, sir?
An order of your famous orange noodles, Jordan said, looking over his shoulder. And make it quick. A group of lower deckers were gathering nearby, watching him. He motioned for Jenkins, who stepped out with his baton, slapping the stick against his palm.
"Go back to your business," Jenkins said.
Jordan focused on Dom, who had retreated into the booth. He turned on a stove burner, grabbed a skillet and pot, and set them over the flames.
"Just a few minutes, Captain," Dom said.
Jordan nodded and folded his arms across his chest, waiting impatiently.
"Didn't know you were a fan of my noodles," Dom said.
"I'm not," Jordan replied. "These are for a friend."
Dom nodded and peeled a small orange, dropping the sections into a pot with freshly cut vegetables.
"Your friend got a name?" he asked, reaching up for a jar of spices. "I know most of my customers, and I remember exactly how they like their noodles. Some like crunchy, some like soft, some like..."
"Katrina," Jordan said, cutting off his chatter.
Dom glanced over, holding the skillet in one hand.
"Ah, how is she? I haven't seen her for a while."
"She's been busy," Jordan said.
He turned to see how Jenkins was holding up. The busy marketplace had grown subdued since their arrival. Gone were the shouts from hawkers and hustlers, replaced by hushed voices and glares from resentful passengers, all of them focused on Jordan and his bodyguard.
"Hurry up," Jordan said to Dom.
"Katrina likes her noodles crunchy. If I hurry, they're going to be too soft. She's like eggs, very particular about the consistency."
"What did you say?" Jordan snapped.
Don flipped the veggies in the skillet without looking at him.
"I said Katrina likes her noodles crunchy."
"After that?"
"She's very particular,"
Jordan cut Dom off a second time.
"Why are you talking about X? He's been gone for a decade."
Dom froze in mid-flip, losing several vegetable bits in the process. Onions and other ingredients sizzled on the stove, and several fell to the filthy deck. Cursing, he scrambled to put the burner out. Jordan let out a sigh as he watched Dom try to salvage the meal. When he had finished cleaning up, he apologized and said,
"Sir, I didn't mean to upset you.
I... just give me the food so I can be on my way."
Dom handed Jordan a small container of the steaming noodles.
"This one's on me, sir," he said.
Jordan didn't bother thanking the man. After that fiasco, Dom was lucky he didn't lose his food license.
"Let's go, Sergeant," Jordan said.
He followed the soldier out of the trading post, ignoring the onlookers. By the time they reached the brig, Jordan had started to calm down. But the thought of X remained on his mind as he walked through the corridors and steeled himself for what came next. At the brig, Sloane stood guard at the metal station inside the lobby. She straightened her hunched back when she saw Jordan and Jenkins arrive.
"I'm here to see Katrina," Jordan said.
Sloane ran a hand over her shaved scalp. Her lazy eye made her hard to read, but she looked shifty today. Something was wrong.
"Is that going to be a problem?" Jordan asked.
"Yes, Captain. I'm sorry, but she's been transferred to the medical ward."
"What? When did this happen?"
"A few hours ago."
"Why?" Jordan snapped. "What's wrong with her? Is it the baby?"
Sloane hesitated, her hard features softening.
"She had a miscarriage, Captain.
I'm really sorry."
Jordan stared at Sloane for a moment, the words not seeming to quite sink in. She bent down with Jenkins to pick something up from the ground. Looking down, Jordan saw the mess of noodles he had dropped on the floor. 11. 2 years earlier. X was being pulled deeper and deeper into the filthy swamp water. He glimpsed the mud-caked bones of buildings and houses forming an underwater city all around him. He slashed at the reptilian coils gripping his body, but they continued to tighten, squeezing his armor against his ribs. The pressure made breathing difficult. Blood sang in his ears. The breathing apparatus in his helmet kept him from drowning, but that wouldn't matter if he couldn't breathe or if his helmet took on water. At least Miles had escaped, although it wouldn't matter if X didn't survive. The genetic modifications enabled the dog to survive in harsh conditions, but without X, he wouldn't be able to get food or water. X twisted and squirmed to no avail. The only way out of this was to fight. He had maneuvered his knife around and was sawing away at the thick hide when he noticed flashes of movement in the cloudy muck. The struggle had attracted other creatures. Sucking in what little air he could get into his lungs, X fought back with the last of his strength. He angled the tip of his blade into the gap between the coils and his chest armor before it could tighten even more. He had barely nicked the gigantic snake, but it suddenly unwrapped itself, leaving him to sink slowly through the water. He filled his lungs with a long breath as the tail whipped away, vanishing into the cloudy depths. Something massive and covered in gray scales rushed through the murk in front of him, churning the water and hitting him with a wake that knocked him backward. He drifted, still trying to catch his breath.
There was something else down here. Something worse than the snake-like monster.
Pulling with his arms, X kicked toward the surface. He wasn't the best swimmer, but fear inspired him. If the snake thing was retreating, then it wasn't the top of the food chain here, and X had no illusions about where he fit in, which had to be somewhere near the bottom. It took him an entire minute to haul himself back to the surface. When he finally broke through, he wasn't even close to land. The snake had pulled him deep into the swamp. 500 feet away, Miles paced and barked at the water's edge.
"I'm coming, boy. Hang on."
He swam toward the embankment. The quake had churned the calm water into scum-choked waves that slapped the shoreline and knocked him about. The armor weighed him down, and the radiation suit clung to him, impeding his movement in the water. He sank below the surface for a moment, kicked back up, and kept swimming. Every few strokes he would force his body back into a horizontal plane by kicking hard with his boots, but even adrenaline and determination couldn't keep him above water for long. Halfway to shore, he continued to struggle, dragged downward again and again by his armor, boots, and helmet. Thunder boomed and lightning sizzled as he treaded water to catch his breath. He glanced over his shoulder just as a reptilian head and upper body slid through the surface 50 feet behind him. Maybe it was the same one that had tried to kill him. Not that it mattered. For a moment, the eyes seemed to fix on his, but then it was sucked back down into the water as if by an unseen force. The creature gave a loud hiss before it vanished in the churning brown foam. A massive dorsal fin sliced through the waves. X flung himself toward the shore. The time for rest was over. He straightened his body and timed his strokes and kicks, trying to get a rhythm going. Swimming was a part of Helldiver training, and though he was rusty, the thought of becoming fish food kept his aching body moving. As X narrowed the distance to shore, Miles, unable to help himself, jumped into the water trying to meet him halfway. X saw movement in his peripheral vision, but he didn't turn. After pulling a few more yards, he spotted the dorsal fin up ahead. It appeared to be moving toward shore. Toward Miles. X stopped to tread water and wave his hands in the air.
"Over here!" he shouted. "Come get me, you slimy bastard!"
The fin changed tack, heading right for X. He continued treading water. Water had leaked into his helmet, and it smelled worse than any shit pot aboard the airship he once called home. "Of all the things to remember," he thought. X didn't have time to celebrate having resurrected the name of the ship from his desolate memory banks. He pulled his knife out and faced the wide, scaly back of the abomination barreling toward him. The tail rose up and then slapped down on the surface. The fin alone was the size of his body, but he couldn't see the rest of the monster. Just as it was about to reach him, he dived below the surface and rolled to look up. At last he could see the monster's head. It had a bony face, with mandibles where teeth should be. Those serrated jaws could crush him, armor and all. He thrust the knife upward into the pale gray belly passing overhead. The blade skittered across scales tougher than his own armor. The huge tail fin whipped, hitting him so hard he choked on a mouthful of the putrid water in his helmet. He kicked back to the surface and pulled for shore, still 100 feet away. He swam until his feet hit the muddy lake bed. Righting himself, he waded as fast as the sticky muck would allow. The fish lurked in deeper water, watching. It finally slapped the water with its tail and turned to swim through the shallows. As it got closer, the fearsome mandibles opened. It could consume X in a single bite. Panting and trying not to retch into his helmet, he slogged up onto the shore and motioned for Miles. He moved up the slope. Behind him, 10 feet from shore, the monster breached onto the shallow bottom. A wave hit the shore in a spray of brown muck as the beast struggled to free its massive body. After putting some distance between himself and the shore, X collapsed onto his back. Miles nudged up against him and tucked his helmeted head under X's arm. The floundering monster clacked its mandibles together, staring at X with eyeballs the size of porthole covers, before it finally broke free of the mire and vanished. He wasn't sure how long he lay on the road, but at some point, after dumping the swamp water from his helmet, he dragged himself up and continued his trek toward the bunker on his map, limping and grunting like an injured beast. Despite the pain, he had no choice but to keep going. He walked in a daze, unsure of anything except the stark reality that if he stopped moving, he might never get up again. 3 days after the earthquake and the attack from the swamp creatures, X finally found the refuge under an old airfield. Using his computer monitor, he hacked his way in. A long tunnel led him to a garage, but he ignored the old-world vehicles and searched the rest of the small bunker. When he finally sat down and peeled back the bandages covering the wound on his leg, he could see that it was infected, and he had developed a fever from swallowing the fetid swamp water. Adding to his misery, his throat was now so raw he had trouble swallowing. He found water and preserved food, all of it engineered to last for ages. That didn't mean the food tasted good, but he didn't care. Once he had fed Miles, he unfolded a cot and collapsed on it. He rested there, breathing heavily, his lungs crackling and his shaking body covered in a sheen of sweat. Miles licked the salt off his skin.
"I'm okay, boy. I'm okay."
X downed some antibiotic pills he found in the bunker's medical supply, hoping they would break the fever. When he was well enough, they would cross the final stretch of land to the ocean. After reaching that goal, if he was to die, then so be it. Through the open door, he looked out over the garage. It was one of 3 rooms in the smallest bunker X had ever found in his journey across the ruined United States. Several old-world motorcycles and armored vehicles sat in the dark space, waiting for drivers long since dead. His eyes went to the map, which showed a network of old roads leading to the coast. Then he looked back to the vehicles.
One of them will take you there.
As soon as he could sit up without blacking out, he would start restoring one of them. If he could get a working motor vehicle, it would make the final leg of his journey much easier. But first, he had to survive the fever. Shivering, he swallowed a sip of water, his throat burning as the liquid ran down his swollen throat. A wave of lightness washed over him, and for a moment, he had that weightless sensation he used to feel during the first seconds of a dive. He laid his head back and closed his eyes, hoping he wouldn't dream of monsters or memories. Present day. Michael kicked a rock. It skidded across the dirt and dropped into the swamp with a plop.
"Dangers on all sides," he muttered, looking out over the water.
His gaze shifted to the city. The mutant foliage had retreated, but the sirens were out there stalking them. The mission to find X had gotten off to a lousy start. They were still alive, though, and they hadn't wasted any ammo. He scanned the sky to the south, where Timothy had dropped them, and wondered what X would do in his shoes.
He would fight. He would do what it takes to survive.
Michael looked over at Layla's profile. Every decision he made affected her, Mags, and Roger. They were his friends, his family, and they all were looking for him to lead them through this wasteland. He chinned on the radio frequency for deliverance.
"Timothy, this is Michael. Do you copy? Over."
Static crackled into his helmet. Either the storm was blocking the signal or Timothy wasn't responding. Either way, they were stranded without an evac.
"I still can't reach Timothy," Michael said. "So we're going with Plan B."
"Plan B better not involve boats," Magnolia said.
"Or man-eating trees," Roger said.
Michael turned his binos back to the swamps, scanning for a way across, but only saw small islands barely big enough for one of them to stand. They had already plumbed the water's depth. Wading wasn't an option. They needed transportation. Again, he eyed the rusted boat. Judging by the holes in the hull, it wasn't going anywhere. But maybe there was another way.
"Sorry, but my plan includes both those things," Michael said.
Layla stepped closer to him and put her slender hand on his shoulder. Things between them had been different since Weaver's death. She had been burdened with grief, while he had been grappling with the responsibilities of command. It felt good to know she still supported him. He had missed holding her in his arms, more than he wanted to admit.
"We're going to have to head back into the city to find transportation across the water," Michael said. "I don't want to hear any protests. Let's get it done, Team Raptor."
Normally, he would have asked for opinions, but he already knew what the other divers thought, and there was no time to argue. He waved the group after him, and they set off across the fields separating the banks of the swamp from the ruins. Lightning speared through the sky. In the cold flash of light, Michael glimpsed a siren. The winged monster sailed under the cloud cover with a vine in its claws. The severed tentacle wriggled like a snake in its grip. An otherworldly call echoed over the island, stopping the divers in their tracks. The beast swooped into a building where it disappeared.
6 o'clock, Roger said.
He raised his pistol toward the sky where another siren hunted. It glided back to the south, taking no notice of them.
"Anyone else have eyes?" Michael asked.
So far, he had seen only 3 of the creatures, but the island was surely home or hunting ground to more.
"Got nothing," Layla said. "Me neither," said Magnolia.
Michael flashed the signal to advance, and they continued toward the city. He took point and ran in a low hunch along the brick wall of the closest building. He didn't know where the hell they were going to find a boat, but he wasn't picky. All he needed was something that would float. If it came down to it, he would swim to find X. Crouching, he peered around the corner. The vines had writhed back into the broken structures, but he could see spiny branches rising through the tops of several buildings.
"Roger,"
Michael hissed, motioning Roger forward. Roger darted over and knelt beside Michael.
"I want you to stay here and watch over Layla, okay? She's injured."
Roger hesitated before nodding. Michael knew that he would rather be with Magnolia, but the man's ridiculous crush didn't figure into the decision. Michael moved over to Layla.
I'm sorry, but you're staying here with Roger. I'm taking Magnolia.
She raised a hand to protest, but he cut her off.
Mags is faster, and you're hurt.
Sorry, babe.
If you said you need me to stay here and babysit Roger, that would make me feel better, Layla said with a wry smile.
Michael grinned and pressed his helmet against hers.
I love you.
Love you too, Tin, she said.
Be careful.
Magnolia crawled over and waited for Michael to give the all clear.
Just you and me this time, he said. Show me how fast you are.
Fearless, fast, and Roger began before Michael cut him off.
Radio silence unless necessary.
Sorry, Roger said.
Be careful out there, you guys.
Michael crept around the wall to look for contacts a second time. Seeing the empty street, he tilted his head for Magnolia to follow. She took off running down the street behind him. The nuclear blast had mostly spared this area, but Mother Nature had done what the explosion had failed to do, leaving most of the man-made structures broken. A raucous thunderclap rattled the ruins as they crossed the street. Michael gritted his teeth and looked up at the swirling beast of a storm above them. He tried to reach Deliverance again.
Timothy, this is Michael. Do you copy?
Over. More static. What the hell was going on? Michael pointed toward a three-story building on the left side of the street. Branches stuck out of the third-floor windows, but the first floor looked clear. He stepped up to the open doorway and peered left, then right. The ceiling had caved in, dumping a bathtub, sink, and toilet on the floor.
No good, he said.
They moved on to the next building and continued their search. Inside, the vines and trees had lost their pinkish glow and were a dark brown, camouflaged to blend with the rest of the drab landscape. The vegetation looked dead, but they were careful to avoid it just in case. The first block turned up no boats, and happily no sirens, just the filthy interiors of houses where his ancestors had once lived in peace. He led Magnolia onto the next block, where several shop fronts faced the road. Old-world vehicles rusted under downed power lines. An ash-covered electrical cable stretched across the sidewalk like one of the carnivorous vines. Michael stepped over a faded sign that read, Coffee and Espresso.
What the hell was espresso?
It was hard to imagine what this place had once looked like. On other dives, he had never paid too much attention to artifacts. His mind was always focused on the dangers, not the treasures. Today was no different. He ignored another sign that promised something called Sia Food, and directed Magnolia toward a building across the next street. A large metal door covered the storefront, suggesting that something inside might have survived intact. They ducked into an alleyway to look for a back entrance. Lightning smacked down a block away. The tremor rumbled across the dirt. Michael braced for the mighty crack that followed, rattling his body and hurting his ears. Magnolia stepped up to a metal door in the brick wall of the alleyway and tried the handle. Locked. She slung her rifle over her back and pulled out her toolkit while Michael stood guard. He couldn't see much of the sky, and the thunder made hearing difficult, but there was still no sign of the sirens.
Layla, how you doing back there? He asked over the comms.
There was a short wave of white noise.
I'm fine, but Roger won't sit still.
Take a seat, Roger Dodger, Michael ordered.
Yes, Commander. Whatever you say.
When he returned, after he and Layla stole a few moments for themselves, he was going to have a talk with Roger about a few things. The man had no respect for rank, and while he considered Roger a friend, Michael was also his commander. He needed to know that Roger would follow orders without questions or sarcasm. Michael raised his AK-47 as Magnolia opened the door. He chinned on his NVGs and moved inside, raking the barrel over the damp walls of what had been some sort of workspace. Industrial equipment was mounted on long tables in a room the size of the trading post on the hive. The ceiling appeared mostly intact, aside from a few holes that had allowed water in. Pools had collected in several places. He motioned for Magnolia to check the right side of the space while he cleared the left. They weren't going to find a boat here, but perhaps there was something that would help them. He spotted a rust-caked sign on the wall. This one didn't have any text, just the symbol of what looked like a computer. He stepped around a table stacked with equipment he didn't recognize and ducked down to check underneath. Several tools and cans